It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 12th day of July, 2023. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all times in between and the great globe round. And whatever time it is when you happen to be listening to the podcast. If you're listening to the podcast, please, please, pretty please, leave a comment for the algorithms or whatever platform you're listening on. There's so many of them. Apple Podcasts, Podcast Republic, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn even. They're like mushrooms after a spring rain. But wherever you're listening, please leave a comment, like, follow, subscribe, and share the program with your friends and neighbors on social media, because it's a great way of inviting more people into the conversation. And this is conversation radio, and it would be nice to hear from more people. So thanks so much if you do that. Thanks for listening one way or the other. It's much appreciated. And, well, if you're listening live, then feel free to wander on by the Horn chat room, where you will be greeted by the early arrivers as Squeaky and Ralphs and Matt in San Francisco. Hey, y'all! And where you're incapably moderated by yours truly, who is no moderator. I'm worse than no moderator at all. That's what that boils down to. But, no, come on by. The conversation is fine. We are at midweek. It is prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. But every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So thanks go out to our 12th day of the month subscribers, and that means thank you, subscribers via PayPal, that is. Thank you to James. Thank you so very kindly. Thank you to Gary in New York. Thank you, Paul. Thank you so much, Paul. Thank you to David. Wait, that was yesterday. Okay, but thanks nonetheless, because, well, David jumped in there. And I didn't, honestly, I didn't notice, and I apologize, but thank you. So, Robin, where's the fundraising goal for this evening? Well, it is at $1,391. That's what it's going to take to, get us caught up this far. And we are 12 days into July and $1,391 in the hole. So that's all of today, all of yesterday, all of Monday, all of Friday, and $191 of Thursday. So we're working on last Thursday, and much appreciated each and every one of you who do what you do to keep this little effort on the air. I can never thank you enough, but know that you do have the undying thanks of me, of my little family, and of the overall community, because there are a lot of people who listen who, for various reasons, can't contribute, and you make the program possible for them. So actually, when you contribute to the program, it's kind of an altruistic act. It is an altruistic act. Yeah? So, being as it is prayer meeting Wednesday, well, you know, we're approaching the middle of July, and the little old blue-haired men and the little old blue-haired ladies and the little old blue-haired non-binary people, and some of the binary people might be little, but, well, blue no longer denotes age under the present circumstances. But, yes, they've been busy in the fellowship hall kitchen, very much so. And as a consequence, you know, it being middle of July, there was fresh watermelon, and the folks in the fellowship hall kitchen, well, they know that I prefer watermelons with seeds in them because I think the seedless watermelons are just, they don't carry the same flavor punch, and where's the fun of a watermelon if you can't spit the seeds, right? And then if you're doing it out in the yard sometime, not like that, doing it out in the yard. Quit it, y'all. Church. Well, sometimes you get a volunteer watermelon plant coming up, and that's always kind of cute. So we had watermelon, and there was a nice green salad, fresh tomatoes chopped into it, onions and celery and all the other trimmings for a salad. And it being high summer, we had grilled cheeses down in the fellowship hall kitchen. There were pickles to go with it and condiments as you please. And then, having had their fill, and on top of that strawberry shortcake, which the deacons just went after with a will, now they trundled their massive bulk up from the fellowship hall, up the couple of flights of stairs, went out into the parking lot, and took to smoking with the sinners. You know, hey, buddy, you got a light? And I let them hotbox a couple before I walked out the vestibule door with the cathedral solar-powered cattle prod and gave it a couple of crackles. And that always gets the deacons to moving, and bodies at rest tend to remain at rest, and bodies in motion tend to remain in motion. And they got to motion, and they came rumbling and stumbling and bumbling and thundering past me. Anyone who's ever seen a herd of wildebeest running on the African plain has an idea of what it looks like when the deacons get moving. And they bumbled past me. They bumbled past the desiccating bowl of buttermints and grabbed a couple of shots of hand sanitizer just to starch them up through the program. I got a flit gun up here. If they start falling asleep, I use the flit gun. Well, they're waiting down front here for you. So, it being prayer meeting Wednesday, we're going to call the Minister of Music up for our offertory hymn, as we have over, lo and behold, these many years. And, sibling Minister of Music, if you would, please.
And he said, it's time for you to leave behind the things of this world. The fine houses, the fancy cars, the flashy clothes, because we are all naked in the eyes of the Lord.
Stop! This man is clinically
insane! Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen!
Amen!
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord!
Praise the Lord!
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah!
Hallelujah!
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Oh, Mersey dotes and dozy dotes and little lambsy davy, a kiddly davy too. Wouldn't you? Wouldn't you, brethren and sistren and non-binary siblings? Wouldn't you? Well, if you would, I'm calling on you to get up off of your feet and shuffle out of your seats and squinch and scrooch and screech and wiggle and waggle and waddle and come on out from betwixt the pews and come on down that blood red aisle and fall upon your knees at the altar and lay your hands. There's plenty of room for hand laying. Lay your hands upon the subwoofer and feel the healing. Amen. Healing rays of common sense, of flowing through you from the server on high. I am Archpope, Uber Rabbi, Ultimate Imam, Animated Animist, Antagonized Agnostic, Vicarious Vicar, Maximum Metropolitan, Naughty Nun. Oh. Anointed Abbess. Robin Kincaid, and this is the Cathedral of Common Sense on the Horn. There's a lot of other stuff to talk about this evening. But it being Wednesday, it's always good to start with a little bit of right-wing fascist nutbaggery. And there's always an abundance of that. A good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Christian in the state of Arkansas. Remember, we are accurate. We try to be accurate here on the Horn. So I mentioned Arkansas, and I have to point out that any failures of edumacation for Tommy the Tuber, the senior senator from the state of Alabama, must be laid at the feet of Arkansas. Again, sorry, Haley. She knows. She knows. Well, there in Arkansas, they've got a state senator by the name of Dan Sullivan. And Dan Sullivan has found himself a new enemy. Because he's a Christian. He's had a particular hang-up for rather a while now. He's real happy about a bill there in Arkansas that their governor, Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags, or Jethreen Bodine, she of the baleful glare of her gimlet eye. I remember one evening that Scott and I had a real big giggle about the baleful gimlet-eyed glare of Governor Jethreen Bodine. Well, a while back, Jethreen Bodine signed a law that said that books, you know, those dangerous, dangerous things, books, could be removed from school libraries and other libraries too, for and that librarians could even be prosecuted. Here we are. Yeah, I know. 21st century, third year of the third decade of the 21st century, and we got book banners running loose all over the country. Well, I know it's tough to get through the eugenics wars and all of that, but it'll be nice when we finally get to the Star Trek future and we can, and all the maggots and are no longer out there screwing up the situation for the rest of us. Eugenics wars are bad. That's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. So Dan Sullivan wants to cut library funding. And when he was speaking at the National Association of Christian Lawmakers, they had their meeting at Jerry Falwell University there. And God, I bet every sex worker in that entire region was on triple time for that one. God, good God fearing, upstanding Bible believing pervert Christians. When he was speaking to the National Association of Christian Lawmakers, Dan Sullivan said, "The libraries are an institution, often like higher ed. They are far left, and they've been a bastion of the left wing. They're the ones holding the drag queen shows. They're the ones promoting Pride Month. Our county library last year had a huge pride sign, and they had flags and books. This year they backed off that and had very little because we took their money away. You learn as a legislator real quick, if you want things to change, take the money. I love the libraries. They're fantastic institutions. They've been taken over by the far left, and it's time for us to take them back. When we come back to session in 2 years, we're going to eliminate all the funding for public libraries that have the American Library Association in their policy. We're going to take a shot at them, because that's where it's coming from." And all the other attendees there of the National Association of Christian Lawmakers, all they clapped and they hooted and they howled and they barked and they brayed and they grunted and they were so happy because books is evil. It's fine to have libraries, y'all, as long as there ain't but one book in it, the Bible, and maybe the Midnight Ride of Rush Revere. Yes. Oh, for God's sakes. The American Library Association is an enemy of freedom now to the right wing. Because, well, that's where we are. And by the way, you know, a little while back, the Moms for Liberty... Sit, Liberty, sit. Woof! The Moms for Liberty had their summit. And they had all kinds of mangy freaks speaking to them. And of course, the Moms for Liberty are a hate group. They're a gang of pissy little Karens. They're fascist as AF. And they had people to talk to them, like Nitwit Nero and Ron Monkey Up DeClantis and Nimrata Haley, who was punked into thinking she was talking to the president of Poland back when she was the ambassador to the UN, and the Morning Zoo crew from Moscow 98.2, the vulgar boatman, got her to talk all about how she was worried about that island nation called Bonomo, which doesn't exist. Yeah, she talked to him, and Vivek Ramaswamy, he talked to him, and oh, dear God, Mark Robinson, the lieutenant governor of North Carolina Stan, who hopes to become the governor of North Carolina Stan, more on him in a minute, he was there. Byron Donalds, a maggot from Florida, who was briefly nominated to be the Speaker of the House of Representatives during that entire kerfuffle. Ryan Walters was there. Yes. He's the State Superintendent of Public Instruction in Oklahoma, Stan. And he says that teachers and teachers unions are, well, he says teachers unions are terrorist organizations. Yeah, he went so far in his little video presentation at one point, back when he was at a public hearing in May, back in Oklahoma, Stan, he said that teachers are pedophiles. Mm-hmm. They had all kinds of weirdos there. I mean, Dennis Prager of the so-called Prager University grift. Who most vocally opposed the removal of a statue of Bobby Lee. The man who committed treason against the United States. And led the traitorous forces. Yeah, that Dennis Prager was mad that they took down the traitor statue. I mean, there was a bunch there of outright weirdos. You know who else signed on to speak to the Moms for Liberty? Said Liberty. Said, oh, really? Good Liberty. Rodded F. Kennedy Jr., Rodded F.K., he initially agreed and accepted an invitation from the Moms for Liberty. I don't know if they came up with the $30,000 that he usually charges for showing up for things like saving a community from some degree of horrifying toxic pollution. But he did. He signed up. He was going to come and talk to him and tell him about the evils of vaccines. And how if he became president, he would prosecute Anthony Fauci. And oh, that would have gotten the Moms for Liberty so terribly, terribly excited. Because he's the top Kennedy now. I mean, he backed out. Rodded F.K. backed out because people began saying, hey, you're really going to go and talk to a bunch of fascist Karens? Really, Rodded F.K.? And you're running for the Democratic nomination for the presidency of the United States of America? But you're going to go talk to them? And then suddenly, filled with the light and the righteous fury, nah, bullshit. None of that. All of a sudden, he declared that he wasn't going to be able to speak. Gosh, he would have loved to have spoken to the Moms for Liberty. But he had a scheduling conflict. Oops. A scheduling conflict. Mm-hmm. So that. Well, in addition to that, I mentioned the Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina, Stan. But before I do that, I need to correct a bit of an error on my part. I wanted to thank Vicky. Vicky up in Michigan. Thank you, Vic. Lori. My bad. Lori, I apologize. Thank you. Thank you, Lori. Up in Michigan. Lori sent a message that I missed in reading the list earlier. Looks like Biden tweaked Obamacare so it could be affordable again. Maybe you'll finally be able to get health care, hopefully. Thank you. Thank you, Lori. I do so appreciate it. And an anonymous individual just jumped in. So we went from 1391 to 12 to $1,100 for the fundraising hole, which is really quite impressive. Thank you so much to both of you. That means that Thursday is fully funded. And, well, $100 of Friday is fully funded. And that is fantastic. I cannot thank you both enough for that. And hopefully we'll, that'll be a little trend as the deacons continue to pass the plates with the little yellow PayPal button in the center amongst the congregation. Just take it and press the button and pass it. And, well, that's how that works. So thank you to our anonymous friend, and thank you to Lori up in Michigan so very much. Brother Deacon Asa, I do not have a filthy mind. If you want a filthy mind, you take that up with Jeremy in Vermont. I made that one little quip, and Jeremy immediately responded and said, I assure you, but Robin, I assure you, they do it outside in the churchyard as well, so there's no shame in doing it out in your own yard. Well, doggone it, Jeremy. Annette's just even now beginning to get over her case of Lyme's disease, so no, ain't nobody going to be doing it out in the yard, because them little ticks are tiny. They are. Ralph says, wow. Yeah, that's almost an entire day's funding there between Lori and our anonymous friend. That's amazing. As regarding books and libraries and chimbleys. I remember hearing those and making my skin crawl, even as a tiny child. Libraries and chimbleys. So, says Stephen New York, books are far left. Glad to accept that. I kind of know what you mean, Steve. Hold on there, he said, though. You mean the Bible that has the language Jesus spoke, the King James Bible? Right, well, that's the only Bible. I don't want to hear about any of these other heretical things that claim to be Bibles. And there's even one out there that claims to be a vulgar Bible. And frankly, having read a whole bunch of the King James Version, I got to tell you, it's pretty vulgar, too. Mm-hmm. All that incest and rape and killing of children and murder probably should be removed from more libraries. It's a dirty, dirty, dirty book. But anyway, we needed some preachy stuff to get us started. Let's do something. What was that? Yeah. Now, we've got some news in, today in January 6th news. This is gross. Today, in D.C., United States District Judge Amit Mehta actually acquitted a member of the Oath Keepers . No, I did not. It, just in case, Jeremy said, you think I didn't hear it? I surely did hear that you claimed you're a mighty nun. I know, don't call you Shirley. I did not. I said I'm a naughty nun. Don't you invalidate me. No, really. U.S. District Judge Amit Mehta, in a case tried to the bench without a jury, gave a walk on all seven counts to a guy named James Beeks. Beeks? Lies with Beeks? Sorry. That's just the way the neurons are connected. That was just a fleeting Alan Arkin reference. James Beeks, today, achieved a certain degree of notoriety because he is the... first January 6th terrorist who got acquitted on all charges. James Beeks used to be a Broadway actor, but he's also a gospel sharp, as well as a Michael Jackson impersonator, but no one strangled him to death on the subway in New York City. He got arrested in November of 2021. It was a very special month for me. He was playing the role of Judas in Jesus Christ Superstar. But having been arrested in November 2021 for participating in the terrorist attack on the Capitol of the United States and the seat of constitutional governance in this once great nation, well, he said he was as innocent as a newborn baby. Newborn baby rat. And so, having waived the jury trial, James Beeks argued to the court and I'm not kidding, get the hockey puck. And this, you know, in light of 303 Creative and the Dobbs decision and the Bruin decision and the, well, just generally the way that our most puissant dread sovereign supreme Catholic majesties behave, what Amit Mehta did in acquitting James Beeks is more than a little bit disturbing. A little background on Amit Mehta. He's been a judge since 2014 on the United States District Court for the District of Columbia. Since 2021, he has also sat on the United States Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. He is an immigrant, a native of India, Amit Priyavadan Mehta. And when he was 1 year old, his parents brought him to this country, where he has succeeded beyond, well, no, probably not beyond his parents' expectations. I'm sure they had very, very high hopes for him. Beeks, B-E-E-K-S, Stephen, New York. Got his bachelor's at Georgetown, the university that would not exist had they not sold human beings down the river to keep their institution afloat in the 19th century. I will never not mention that about Georgetown University. Never. He went to the University of Virginia, Mr. Jefferson School. That's where he went to law school. He graduated high up. He had Order of the Coif and all of that. And Barack Obama nominated him to sit on the United States District Court for the District of Columbia. And he was confirmed. And he received his federal judicial commission on December 19th, 2014. He's done good things. He said that the Mazars accounting firm had to turn over its records of Nitwit Nero's accounts to the House Oversight Committee. He's also the presiding judge in an ongoing case, the United States versus Google LLC, a rare antitrust case in the United States. And it was, in fact, old Balls and Strikes John Roberts who appointed Mehta to the FISA court. And he's had a bunch of the cases of the dealing with the terrorists who attacked the Capitol of the United States on January 6th. Among other things, he presided at the prosecution and conviction of Stuart Rhodes. You'll shoot your eye out, kid, which Stuart Rhodes then did for seditious conspiracy. He's got three of the civil lawsuits against Nitwit Nero and a number of his minions. One of those cases having been brought by a number of members of Congress and two police officers suing for damages for physical and emotional injuries. He was, in February of 2022, who issued an opinion that said that Nitwit Nero's claims of absolute immunity from lawsuits were bullshit. So you got to wonder what the hell happened here with James Beeks. That's Clarence Beeks's boy, says Steve in New York. He was the one who stole the crop report for frozen concentrated orange juice documented in the fraud documentary called 48 Hours. No, that was Trading Places, wasn't it? Orange juice futures. Wasn't that Trading Places? Well, anyway. Apparently, Amit Mehta was moved by the argument that James Beeks made to the court and what a lulu. It was earlier this month, the 5th of July. It was a Wednesday. When James Beeks waived his right to a jury trial. God. I mean, these were felonies. These weren't little pissant misdemeanors. Conspiracy, obstruction of an official proceeding, and civil disorder. And so they decided, they reached an agreement with the prosecution. The Department of Justice just threw away five counts, or four counts, ciphering on the fly, and said the trial would be on only two felony counts, conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding, and civil disorder. And so the legal geniuses out there, the analytical legal geniuses, well, you know, that probably means he's going to be convicted on that. No! No. Among other things, at his bench trial, and I am not making this up, James Beeks told Judge Amit Mehta that he had divine authority to participate in the domestic terror attack on the Capitol of the United States on January 6, 2021. Divine. I guess that means he had, within the meaning of, like, 303 Creative and Hobby Lobby and all those other bullshit miscarriages of justice, I guess that means he had a deeply held religious belief. He also told Judge Mehta that the government had no jurisdiction over him. If that sounds at all familiar, that's straight out of the sovereign citizenship movement. Beach said, well, I only joined the Oath Keepers a few weeks before the terrorist attack. I wasn't involved in any of the plots or the planning. And I just joined them in creating a formation when we entered the Capitol. And Judge Mehta told him to go and sin no more. Here's the kicker. Because Tracy and I were talking about, you know, the one of the good ones, you know, like Royce White last night, complaining to Stevie Three Shirts Bannon, the man who looks like rancid hot dog water smells, about how women are too mouthy. Well, James Beeks is apparently vying for some degree of celebrity or fame or just getting paid. Because James Beeks is an African-American man. Can't you just imagine what one of his sermons sounds like? And so, as Steve in New York notes, just moments before closing arguments were about to begin in the case, he let his lawyer, a pettifogger with the ironic name of Hunter, must be his last name. He'd been representing himself, James Beeks had, but then said, oh, no, you do the close. And so Hunter stood up and told Judge Mehta that James Beeks was a hanger-on and a wannabe in the Oath Keepers. And in closing remarks said to the judge, I love this quote, if he didn't know what others intended, he couldn't intend to do it. Which basically is a way of talking about the elements of conspiracy, namely that two or more people have to agree to do an illegal thing, and if any one of them take it, well, I mean, but he didn't agree. Well, he agreed to join the formation that invaded the Capitol. That's some highfalutin legal education you got there at Mr. Jefferson's University there, Ahmet. Flavio, thank you for that. I said it was Steve. It was Flavio. And alluding to other stories in the stack, miscellany, Flavio says, one, Tuckums interviewed Andrew Tate for 2.5 hours. TLDW, that means too long, didn't watch. There you go, Flavio. And two, does Clarence Thomas accept PayPal too? Because he damn sure accepts Venmo. You know, he and Matt Gaetz. Now, who am I kidding? I accept Venmo too. We will keep this program going by any platform we can. And so, yeah, Venmo is an option. I guess we might as well go there. Because apparently, no, really, the crookedest man on the Supreme Court, Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Fappy Thomas, who is so crooked that when he finally dies, they will have to screw him into the dirt with an auger because he's too crooked to bury in a box. Well, he accepted payoffs. Now, I wish I was kidding. I do. I wish I was kidding. I wish the longest-serving member of the Supreme Court of the United States was not also its single most venal and corrupt individual member. Well, here we are again, and I think there's a benefit in at least talking about how utterly crooked Fappy Thomas is. Because then at least we know. Actually, they paid Clarence Thomas's aide. And it was lawyers who actually had business before the Supreme Court of the United States. One of those lawyers was one of the lawyers who was involved in arguing successfully to strike down any consideration of race in college admissions. This goes back to 2019 and, Jesus, a Christmas party that Fappy and his seditious spouse, Ginsurrectionist Thomas, held. I'm sure it was a fabulous soiree. Maybe they held it in their RV in a Walmart parking lot, because that's where Fappy says he likes to hang out. From July 2019 to July 2021, Fappy had an aide by the name of Rajan Vasisht. Well, Rajan Vasisht left his Venmo public, and that's when some enterprising ink-stained wretch went nosing about and noticed that lawyers were funneling money to Rajan Vasisht to cover Fappy's Christmas party. Rajan Vasisht got 7 payments in November and December 2019 from lawyers who had all formerly been legal clerks to Fappy. And all 7 of the payments have memos that say Christmas party or Thomas Christmas Party, CT Christmas Party, CT Xmas Party. CT, you know, Clarence Thomas. The lawyers, Patrick Strawbridge, a partner at Consovoy McCarthy. He's the one who argued that, and again, former clerk to Fappy. He's the one that said affirmative action was violative of the Constitution of the United States. Then there's Kate Todd, also formerly a clerk to Fappy Thomas. That must have been fun for a woman. She at one point was White House Deputy Counsel under Nitwit Nero, back when she was making the payments. She's now a managing partner of Ellis George Cipollone's law office. Albert Lynn. Albert Lynn is the former Solicitor General of my beloved state of West Virginia. And Albert Lynn was instrumental in the limitations put on the Environmental Protection Agency's ability to do something about greenhouse gas emissions. And then there's Brian Schmaltzbach, a partner at McGuire Woods. He, also a former clerk to Fappy Thomas, has argued no small number of cases before the Supreme Court. Manuel Valle, graduate of the right-wing freakazoid college Hillsdale, who also went to the University of Chicago Law School. He's a managing associate at Sidley and Liam Hardy. That's Sidley, and then there's Liam Hardy, who at the time he was making his payoffs to Fappy, was inside the Department of Justice's Office of Legal Counsel. We had that clip yesterday, or that assertion.
That all the Department of Justice is Democrats.
Well, Liam Hardy is now an appeals court judge in the armed forces. Will Consovoy is dead now. He too made a payoff. He had clerked for Fappy from 2008 to 2009. He was a rising star in right-wing legal circles. That probably means that he was on some sort of list at the Federalist Society. None of these lawyers, of course, answered any inquiries from the press about why they were making Venmo payoffs. To an aide for a member of the Supreme Court. Richard Painter, who many of us have seen on TV, a former White House ethics lawyer under George W. Bush, made no bones about it. He said Venmo payoffs to Fappy Thomas were not appropriate. There's no excuse for it, he said. Thomas could invite them to his Christmas party, and he could attend Christmas parties as long as they're not discussing any cases. His Christmas party should not be paid for by lawyers. A federal government employee collecting money from lawyers for any reason, I don't see how that works. Well, it doesn't, but the problem once again arises in that no one can do anything about it. No. I mean, impeachment is the remedy for a lifetime appointed Supreme Court justice. But that remedy is woefully inadequate. And the intentions of the framers of the Constitution, flawed men that they were, were not equal to the task of imagining just how dirty and venal conservatives can be. Well, any time, but, well, for our purposes, in the third year of the third decade of the 21st century of the Common Era. The idea has been floated that these lawyers were paying their way for the Christmas party, but these are all senior litigators, highfalutin silk stocking litigators, were they paying for the bottles of bubbly that they intended to consume? You know, nice bottle of Veuve Clicquot. That sort of thing. Maybe a nice bottle of Pappy Van Winkle, 72-year-old, or, you know, that goes for $10,000 a bottle. I don't know. But Fappy's dirty, and Fappy ain't talking. And here we are. Billable Rick. Venmo payments to Pappy. How much money did former clerks pay to Pappy? Those numbers were not disclosed in the stories that I read. I don't even necessarily know that it's so much about the amount billable as the fact that it did. And just to sort of backtrack, because some of this is really hilarious, to the story that began yesterday's program, the ongoing racism or stone-cold stupidity or both of the senior senator from Alabama, Tommy the Tuber. Well, reporters scrambled all over the Senate office buildings in the wake of Monday's revelations by Tommy the Tuber that he didn't have it in him to denounce white nationalists. So somebody immediately tracked down Moscow Mitch McConnell, who, of course, once posed with an award in front of a giant Confederate flag,
who said, "White supremacy is simply unacceptable in the military and in our whole country."
It's interesting to see and to parse a statement like that. He said that speaking to reporters. So that means he was talking on the fly.
"White supremacy is simply unacceptable in the military."
And you can almost hear the ellipsis there, can't you?
In the whole country.
Yeah, sure, Moscow Mitch. And then there's his number two. That would be John Thune of South Dakotistan. He, of course, received the question as well and said, "I just think there isn't any place for it. We are a country, obviously, that is built around a set of principles that's welcoming." Yes, welcome off the slave ship. Yet welcome to the auction block. We're glad you survived the Middle Passage. Welcoming. That was about all anybody got out of John Thune, though. Because when asked specifically about his dear, dear friend and Republican colleague, Tommy the Tuber, he said, whether he's a racist whether white nationalists aren't necessarily racist, well, that's not for me to decide. And, you know, there's an element of truth to that. It is not for John Thune or for anybody else to decide whether white nationalists are racist, because it is not a matter of opinion. Just like it is not for John Thune to decide whether or not water is wet. It's just a fact that it is. John Thune is a coward, and John Thune is not going to say anything bad about his problematic, racist, dumber-than-dirt brother senator from the not-great state of Alabama. From the welfare state of Alabama. So somebody then stuck a microphone in the face of little Marco Rubio. If I recall our pal Irish Dave correctly, Rubio is Spanish for blonde. And Marco, he wasn't feeling particularly brave. Saying ethnic nationalism is un-American, and I think it would be problematic in the military. My definition of a white nationalist is someone that believes America belongs to white people. That's not American. That's un-American and would be a problem in the military. Again, there's that problem in the military. Just like Mitch McConnell said, in the military, and in the country, too. So by extension, Marco Rubio finds white nationalism in the military to be problematic, but, well, hey, he's from Florida, and that's pretty much, I mean, that state is awash in, and he could not be reelected senator without the votes of white nationalism. I mean, for God's sakes, we invented here on this program the concept of constructive secession, in which Florida is actively engaged. Boy, they still want them federal dollars, and the next hurricane that hits, they're going to have their hands out and their hats out and their, well, at least the buckets that aren't full of hurricane storm drainage, and they're going to have them all out for wads and wads and wads of federal cash. You know, from states like California and Washington and Oregon, Minnesota, Michigan, Illinois, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Darlene, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Charlene. On the other hand, of all the lily-livered, spineless little goons that make up the Senate Republican caucus, it took the junior senator from Alabama. She was anointed by the guy whose seat she now fills, that is Senator Richard Shelby, who began his Senate career as a Democrat in the seat of Howell Heflin, and then promptly turncoated. Well, Katie Britt, having been reached by HuffPost, said, "White supremacy and racism have absolutely no place in our country, period. The end." But she couldn't quite reach this point of saying, and my colleague, the senior senator from Alabama, is dumber in the head than a hog is in the ass. No. And we discussed yesterday how Chuck Schumer strongly denounced, someday I hope to hear Chuck Schumer actually strongly denounce something. Later on Tuesday, Tommy the Tuber did finally, white nationalists are racist. Yeah, but if he hadn't been chased by reporters all day long, he never would have gotten there. And interestingly, and this story comes from The Hill, The Hill story says that one Republican senator who requested anonymity observed that Tommy the Tuber appears to be gaining political strength. And, you know, we say tuber and we think potato. But he could also be a parsnip. A carrot is a tuber. Turnip seems particularly apropos, doesn't it? Yeah, Tommy the Turnip, Tommy the Rutabaga. I know, deep political analysis, right? Discussing tubers. But the anonymous Republican senator said that after Tommy the Tuber has been holding up 260 military promotions for months on end because the Defense Department says that a member of the armed services who becomes pregnant and needs an abortion can be reimbursed for travel to a sane state where she can deal with her right to control the workings of her own reproductive system, and that she can be provided leave time necessary to it. That is why he's doing all of this. And the anonymous Republican senator says that he's getting stronger in Alabama as a result, because, you know, in Alabama, they respect life. You know, except the ones that are already in being and deal with poverty, hunger, lack of access to decent medical care, environmental poisoning on a daily basis. Now, that life, they don't know that. No. Because, from back in May, the Morning Consult poll that was taken said that 50% of respondents in Alabama approve of Tommy the Turnip's job performance, and only 32% disapproved. That means there's 18% of the respondents who are like, "What? Roll Tide, y'all." Over at the Senate Armed Services Committee, Roger Wicker of Mississippi, Stan, was getting onto an elevator, and when someone asked him, he just walked into the elevator and let the doors close behind him. "I'll worry about it tomorrow. I answered a lot of questions about that," and gave the reporters a smart-ass little grin. And Senator John Cornholio also waved the back of his hand at the members of the Fourth Estate and walked on into the GOP leadership office before the weekly GOP conference lunch, and wouldn't you have loved to have been a fly on the wall for that one? God damn it, Tommy! Why can't you figure when to keep your pie hole shut? There we were, actively and enjoyably fucking over Joe Biden's promotions. They're non-political. They're critical to the workings of this government, which we hate because we're Republicans. And you got to go talking about how the white nationalist is just Americans like you and me. Granted, ain't one of us in here could possibly get elected into office without white nationalists, because, I mean, we're Republicans. But God damn it, Tommy, shut the fuck up. Oh, but then there was Bishop Senator Willard Romney. And he came closer to telling the truth than anybody else that the reporters talked to. He said, "Our party has lots of problems. Add that to the list. I don't think Senator Tuberville is in any way racist." No, he's not in any way racist, Willard. He's in every way racist. Parsing these little fuckers is not that much of a challenge, is it? Oh, but then they stuck a microphone in front of precious Senator Lindsey Graham's face. He said, "White nationalism to me is a political movement based upon a person's race, which I don't give any support or validity to. If you're a member of the white nationalist movement, then I think that movement is based on race, and I don't like it. It's up to Tommy whether he wants to stop defending them. But if a military member is on social media espousing racial superiority, then kick them out. Love it when Lindsay gets all butch. Then there's Kevin Kramer from the state north of John Thune's South Dakota stand. Kevin Kramer's from North Dakota stand. And he was scratching his little upper Midwestern noggin. And he said, and came as close to calling Tommy stupid as just about anybody did in his caucus. Well, I don't know that he knows what that means to some people. Or maybe he does and doesn't care. He's clearly sort of doubled down on the whole notion. There are certain things that I get you might be able to make a technical case for it. Okay, I call them Americans. Well, yeah, but so is everybody in prison for life for murder. They're Americans. That's technically true. But it still doesn't mean you honor them. But it was clear that Kramer would rather not be dealing with this, and because he said, you know, it's unnecessary. I know that much. As far as an issue for him, he doesn't need it. I don't know why he insists on using it. Kevers Kramer has apparently never been to Alabama. This whole thing is a big hit with Alabama Republicans, y'all. I promise. I promise. But anything that makes them more miserable, I'm all for. Let me deal with a little bit of email here. Lou, could you kindly tell us the title and artist of the Christian fundraising song you played at the beginning? That's an old bit from The Chaser, which is an Australian broadcasting company program. I assume it's still a going concern. I don't know. And years and years and years ago, our buddy John Fox, down in Australia, clipped that out and sent it to me because he said, this will be perfect for prayer meeting Wednesday. And it has become the offertory hymn of prayer meeting Wednesday for lo these many, many years. It's actually a mockery of the biggest so-called non-denomination gospel hustle in Australia, an outfit called Hillsong, which recently has been embroiled in no small number of nasty, nasty sexual scandals, because of course it has. I've done aggravated K. Hey, K. White nationalists, all caps. They're proudly racist, you stupid Republican fucks. It's literally in their descriptor. Oh, God, I'm getting all worked up again, and I had a good day at work, too, because my coworker stood up for me against the one bigoted coworker we have who refuses to call me by my chosen name. Anyway, I'm beginning to think all this politicking isn't good for my blood pressure. I'm sorry, hon. Subject line, red states with hands out. Wait a minute, I thought it was Democratic states that took handouts from the federal government. Oh, God, no. Alabama, Mississippi, they couldn't keep their streetlights on without federal welfare. Republicans condemning racism. Kay continues, excuse me while I get up off the floor and for not being convinced by their fluffy language. Fluffy language, wait a minute. But by the way, Kay, I am so proud of your coworkers for standing up for you. It's a great moment when you get to see acceptance in real time. Understanding is for the birds. Acceptance is everything. Republicans respect life. Okay. Ah, the fuck they do! Tuberville isn't racist, Kay says. You're right, Romney. He's a racist, xenophobic, anti-LGBTQ plus Christian fascist bigot. God damn, they can't even clear the bar when it's on the damn ground. Oh, that's two for you, Kay. Hopefully the cowbells will bring your blood pressure down. Letting go now. Letting go now. Letting everything go. Yes. Yes, Darlene, you have. Very good, says Darlene. I've trained you well through guilt tripping. I know. I have no shame. Had you shame, you would not be you, Darlene. But now, anytime I think of blue states, I always think of Connecticut. And anytime we need to search anything, I think about how it'll be an area the size of Connecticut. Serving as the Horn Chaser Ad Hoc Research Department, Ralphs and Flavio, The Chasers, War on Everything, Episode 113, Praise the Lord. So if you go to YouTube, Lou, and look for Chasers, War on Everything, Episode 113, you will find the video of the offertory hymn. And so we are well into the second hour of this prayer meeting Wednesday. And, well, let's move over and check out some Julius Geezer news. Because he threw a tantrum today. You kind of have to put the today after it because, you know, if you say he threw a tantrum, well, okay. Dog bites man. When dog bites man, that's news, they say. But when man bites dog, they yell hooray for hot dogs. Armor hot dogs. The dogs kids love to bite. I'm sorry. Do they have a pill for this? No, Nitwit Nero had a conniption because Chris Christie showed up on Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, where he had a little sit down with Ill. Piers Morgan. Let's start there. After the ad.
You wanted to work for
No, I did not.
You wanted to be his attorney general?
No, excuse me.
Didn't you?
I got offered Secretary of Labor, Secretary of Homeland Security, White House Chief of Staff, and I turned them all down.
But you did support him.
Yes, I did.
Until you say January the 6th.
No, not January the 6th. Let me be very clear. People get this wrong. Election night 2020. When he stood up in the East Room of the White House behind the seal of the president and said the election was stolen, when not even all the votes had been counted, and he had no evidence, and to this day has no evidence that the election was stolen, that's when I abandoned him. And by the way, he abandoned me and others like me who supported him. I was the first one on board in 2016. I chaired his opioid commission. I chaired his transition. I prepped him for the debates in 16 and in 20. I did everything I could to support Donald Trump and make him the best president he could be. But he disappointed me and he let me down. He didn't repeal and replace Obamacare with a Republican Congress when he said he would. He added $6 trillion to the national debt. He didn't build the wall in Mexico. He built 47 miles of wall. And guess what? We paid for every nickel of it. We don't have the first peso from Mexico. And so when you look at the ways that he failed us,
oh, my God, Chris Christie is a simpleton. He actually believed Nitwit Nero said, we're going to build a wall, a big, beautiful wall. Believe me, and Mexico will pay for it. You believe that? You believe? Chris, you got some money, buddy, I know. Let me interest you in, can I interest you? Here, look, see, they're real. I got some magic beans here. Pay me.
Not even talking about his personal conduct. As a president, how he failed us, he abandoned me.
All right.
because Piers Morgan was trying to, well, do for nitwit Nero. What? No, that's just improper to use anymore. So, that occasion, nitwit Nero to lose his shit. Early this morning. So, nitwit Nero took with his tiny yet somehow sausage-like little thumbs to his phone. Sloppy Chris Christie, who is polling at 1% and left his state, New Jersey, with an approval rating of 9%, the worst number in state history, was interviewed on Fox News, of course, and stated that I only built 47 miles of border wall, knowing that the actual number is 463 miles. That's oddly specific. As reported by the Department of Homeland Security. This does not include many miles that we fixed or renovated, or areas that I got Mexico to secure. Best border ever. And he did. He desperately wanted to join the Trump administration, but I said no. Chris Christie is a total loser. Ta-da. There will be a day that comes. At least I hope. There will be a day when there will be no more news. About nitwit Nero. And let's be clear where Chris Christie is concerned. I would not pee on him to put out a fire. But oddly enough, he seems to have nitwit Nero's number. He's got that same sort of vibe that, say, Liz Cheney had when she would go after him. And so even if he's polling at 1% or less, don't care. I mean, it's the Republican primary. But the more that Chris Christie can remind people what an abject shitbird failure loser Geezer Disgustus is, well, more power to you, Chris. God. At least he doesn't, you know, at least he doesn't have it, you know, when nitwit Nero yawns, you can't see Chris Christie's face back there, by, you know, framed by his tonsils like you can with Imrata Haley. And even to a certain extent, America's fascist in chief, Ron Monkey Up DeClantis. Clarence writes, in regard to Tommy the Tuber, the irony of this racist senator is he would not be famous or senator if it wasn't for the black football players who won games for the Auburn team. Truth. Here's a fun thing. Just a little thought experiment. What would happen if the next time Tommy the Tuber comes up for re-election, what would happen if the other major college football coach from Alabama were to primary Tommy the Tuber? Because nothing grabs the hearts and minds, the very soul of people in Alabama, like Alabama versus Auburn. What would happen if Nick Saban, who has a winning record far in excess of anything Tommy the Tuber had, the exception being the fact that Tommy the Tuber did beat Nick Saban a couple of times. It won't happen, but it's fun to think about. What would happen in a Republican primary that featured Nick Saban versus Tommy Tuberville. You know, I think Tommy Tuberville would probably win because Nick Saban caught a bunch of shit during COVID for encouraging students and his athletes to be serious and to be careful about the virus. But then again, there's a lot of cachet that goes with that head coach, University of Alabama, highest paid state employee moniker. Oh, you found it? Good, Lou. Hilarious, says Lou. Kay says, Chris Christie, there you go. He doesn't support Trump because he's too openly trying to be a dictator and because he wasn't effective enough in his xenophobia. All Republicans are bigots. Don't be fooled by him going after the orange asshole. Oh, I'm not fooled. I know, Kay. I said, there will be a day with no news about orange asshole. Oh, please, Robin, don't take me to this beautiful day sometime in the future. I meant to put, please do take me to that beautiful, but fat fingers. Self-love is important, Kay. Leave your fingers alone. They're perfectly valid. Nick Saban, Kay says, Saban would never win in Alabama because he's spoken in favor of gun regulation and other communist, fascist, socialist, Marxist, woke ideas, and he's also a native hillbilly. I mean, they might elect an Arkansansan to represent them, but they're never going to elect a West Virginian. Just no. Oh, the offertory hymn. Don in West Tennessee wants to know, too. Can you repeat that? You caught me off guard. Probably easier to find it on YouTube. It's called Hillsong with the S a dollar sign, H-I-L-L, dollar sign, O-N-G. Praise the Lord for all this cash. Probably easier to find that way. I agree. Hillsong, H-I-L-L, dollar sign, O-N-G. Praise the Lord for all this cash. Thank you, Flavio. Thank you very kindly. I hope you can find it, Don. Matt, you think too much. Subject line, Christy. The visual of you squatting over Chris Christie while relieving yourself was not necessary. Humorous, yes. Necessary, no. I agree. I forget that sometimes that this is theater of the mind and there's a lot of imagination involved. Oops. I'll try not to repeat the error. And the ongoing drama over how and when and where marginal trailer queen became a former member of the Feedum carcass continues to roil the chattering class inside the Beltway. Marge is now saying that well, nobody's told me that I'm not a member anymore. And nobody knows if anybody voted against her removal. When a reporter stuck their microphone in Ralph Norman of a Feedum carcass idiot from South Carolina stand, because, of course, in his face, he said, well, ask her. And so the folks from over at Raw Story asked Ralph Norman, well, is transparency no longer a part of what the Freedom Caucus means? And, well, yes, it's part of it. Another reporter piling on, is it? Is it in the Freedom Caucus bylaws that you can throw a member of the Freedom Caucus out? Any organization's got a mechanism for disrelocating somebody. What the hell? What in the name of Foghorn Leghorn is a word like dis-relocating? Is that anything like rapid unplanned disassembly? I'm a practitioner of the art of word knowing, damn it. And I'm just sitting here looking at that word, dis-relocating. And I got to tell you, I got nothing. Not a damn thing. Dis-relocating. So, as of yesterday morning, nobody had the courage to walk up and go, Marge, you're out. You can't play any of our reindeer games anymore in the Feed'em carcass. So then somebody asked the carcass chair, Scott Perry from Pennsylvania. And he said, well, I don't discuss personnel decisions. Now, there's only one problem. Marge, as not being an employee of the carcass, or in any wise personnel within the meaning of the word of the carcass, that notion does not apply to Marge. Then Andy Harris, another pig licking, they asked him. They asked Scott Perry about Andy, who said, she'd been booted. Perry said, well, I like Andy Harris. I think he's a good guy. So then they went to Andy, who just looked at him and said, no comment. And then he lost his shit. A reporter said, why is the chair unable to confirm whether she was voted out? And Andy Harris begun to yell, saying, because it's his business. It's none of your business. It's our business. It's none of your business. At which point, people began to giggle at Andy Harris. I'm sorry, he said. All that's going on in the world, you guys are worried about. That's why nobody likes the press anymore. You know, because the press keeps expecting people who have rules to live by them. We got a war going on. No, we don't. We're not in a war. Ukraine is in a war. We're a member of NATO, and we're supporting NATO decisions. We got a war going on, and you're worried about this? Come on, come on. No comment. Come on, guys. Meanwhile, Eric Swalwell was just giggling. Eric Swalwell noting, you know, you have to work really hard to get kicked out of the Freedom Caucus. And I love this. I love this analogy. This is one for the ages. You have to work really hard to get kicked out of the Freedom Caucus. It's like getting kicked out of the bar in Star Wars, right? Like you really, really have to really, really try hard. They're the fringe of the fringe. For them to throw her out, I don't know what that says about them or her. And he's right. Gee. I hope it doesn't hurt too little. Transparency no longer part of the Freedom Caucus. Okay, so since when was transparency ever a part of anything any Republican, Christian, fascist, sorry for the redundancy, was ever concerned about? You have a point. You do, okay, you have a point. And we've passed the halfway point of the program, and we made some progress toward filling in the hole. earlier this afternoon at the beginning of the program with Lori and our kind internet friend taking us down to $1,100. $200 and last Friday on the front porch is funded. It's fantastic. So we'll just keep the deacons passing the plates and see if a little prayer meeting Wednesday, community-made miracle, transpires. Any kind of help is great. Need new subscribers badly. Patreon or PayPal. If you want to do PayPal, it's just a box you check at the main page of HeadOn.live. You got to go to the contribute page to do Patreon. I'm not funding a Christmas party or anything, but Venmo works too. But I have to figure out how to sign back into it, because my phone is signed out of it. At any rate, we'll deal with that later. Okay, Democrats versus Republicans. One party debates over what is the better way to institute policy to make people's lives better. One party argues over stupid high school drama bullshit and what's the best way to fuck over the most people at one time. You figure out which party's which. I don't think that's going to be very difficult. Then there was a hearing in the House of Representatives today in the House Judiciary Committee, chaired by Jim Jacket Off Jordan. Christopher Wray showed up to testify. And it got hot. Even before what I'm about to share with you happened. Representing Jeff Van Drew is a maggot from New Jersey. And Jeff Van Drew, maggot from New Jersey, is absolutely convinced that corruption, I'm telling you, corruption, has found its way into the FBI. And frankly, there is some evidence to suggest that there is truth in that. Because we do know that some senior level FBI officials had to explain to FBI field agents that no, in fact, the 2020 election was not stolen, and Donald Trump was not the real president. So that feels like some infiltration, but I don't think that's what Jeff Van Drew was getting at. No, Jeff Van Drew, well, who says he's a simple country dentist.
Is it safe?
There we go.
You know, believe it or not, I'm basically just a simple country dentist. But I do know my dentistry. And one thing I know about are abscesses. If you haven't...
Not worth a shit at knowing anything about the House of Representatives, but he does know his dentistry. Would you let this fucker get anywhere near you with a drill? Of course, I'm guessing he doesn't have to do any dentisting anymore.
You know my dentistry. And one thing I know about are abscesses. If you have an abscess, you can have a mild or moderate one, and you treat it with antibiotics and warm salt rinses, and in a week to 10 days, it'll be better. If you have a severe one, you've got to take a scalpel to that abscess. You've got to cut it open, and you've got to let the pus and the blood and the gas drain out.
Y'all, I'm sorry. This is a real shot across the bow during the dinner hour in the Central Daylight Time Zone. So I humbly apologize.
If you don't, that abscess will travel. It'll travel to the patient's brain, possibly, or to their heart, and it definitely can kill them.
Did he say their brain possibly where they're hard? Or am I just having a hard time parsing his accent? I really want to hope that it says, or that it, he said, or their heart, but the speech to text closed captioning says, or their, where they're hard. Stupid computers. They don't speak New Jerseyese.
That's the type of infection that I feel is within the FBI today. It has gotten so deep that we need to get in there with a metaphorical scalpel before it kills our nation. We need real structural change, and this committee is that metaphorical scalpel.
I wish the committee was metaphorical, too. Or at this point, entirely imaginary. Kay notes, the FBI, what these maggots fail to explain besides everything else they spew is why Orange Asshole, who was rooting out corruption and destroying the deep state, would appoint someone who's so corrupt to run an agency as important as the FBI. Because, in fact, Nitwit Nero appointed Christopher Wray. And, frankly, I don't have a lot of confidence in Christopher Wray. I really don't. But I don't think there's some anti-Republican, anti-maggot, anti-Trump conspiracy. No. There's no evidence that there is. It was a long day for Christopher Wray. At one point, he was examined by Harriet Hageman. She replaced Liz Cheney because she, of course, is a loyal maggot. And she hates the FBI because the FBI engaged in a dialogue with the social media companies to try to get the social media companies to stop the flow, the open sewer of right-wing disinformation. It got kind of ugly. I mean, it's Harriet Hageman. It was ugly.
FBI and other federal agencies met weekly with executives from major social media companies, including Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Google, Microsoft, LinkedIn, and Yahoo and Verizon. Were you involved in any of those meetings, yes or no?
I wasn't involved in the kind of meetings that you're talking about, but I didn't participate, I guess, in meetings like that.
Okay. Are these meetings still occurring, and if so, how frequently?
Well, right now, as you may know, there is a preliminary injunction that's been entered.
Prior to the preliminary injunction, were these weekly meetings taking place?
I don't know if weekly meetings occurred, again, before the injunction, but certainly we've been very open about this, engaged with social media companies.
Does the FBI intend to continue to have such meetings leading up to the 2024 election to police election-related speech?
Well, we're not going to be policing election-related
speech. That's what you previously did.
I do not agree with that description.
Okay, well, here's what I would say. This committee has learned that the FBI acted to, quote, discredit leaked information about Hunter Biden before and after it was published. that, quote, Twitter's contact with the FBI was constant and pervasive, and as if it were a subsidiary, and that, quote, a surprisingly high number are requests by the FBI for Twitter to take action on election misinformation, even involving joke tweets from low follower accounts. Are you aware that that has been reported?
I am aware of some of what the committee has found in its report,
okay.
But I will add that I'm not sure I agree with the findings.
But that's what we found. Director Wei, you and I both know that the federal government is forbidden from doing indirectly what it cannot do directly. In other words, neither you nor the FBI have any legal authority to circumvent the First Amendment by using a surrogate to do your dirty work.
Q Steely Dan.
Yet that is exactly what you have been doing. The Bureau, under your watch, has been using proxies to violate the First Amendment. Were you the person who gave the orders to use these social media companies to violate the First violate Americans' First Amendment rights?
Again, I don't agree with your description of our engagement with social media companies.
So who made the decision to use social media companies as a proxy to suppress the First Amendment rights of American citizens?
Because I don't believe that's what we did, I'm not sure there's anyone that would have made such a decision.
Do you really expect the American public to believe that you were not involved in the decisions related to using social media companies to suppress the First Amendment rights of American citizens?
Objection, Your Honor. Assumes facts not in evidence. There's honestly nothing there saying that anybody was trying to suppress the First Amendment rights of law-abiding Americans. There was, however, a concerted effort to, stop Russian troll farms, who are, by definition, not American citizens and don't have a First Amendment right. You ever notice how the First Amendment only comes into play if it's a First Amendment right of some godforsaken maggot? Some blithering Karen with a made-up case, with a made-up customer, so that she doesn't have to make a website for him getting all gay married? You ever notice that? That First Amendment rights only matter when it's a family-run corporation that doesn't want to pay for a woman's slot medicine, my friend, slot medicine. Oh, God damn, the pineapple still hurt. You ever notice that? Because the First Amendment rights of someone who doesn't want to be forced to adhere to Roman Catholic Church teachings about the workings of her body, well, those First Amendment rights can go take a flying fuck at a rolling donut. I don't know how long. I do know how long. I've been saying it as long as this program's been on the air. The First Amendment is nothing more now than a life support system for the religion industry. Yeah, you're right, Ralphs. It happened under Trump, not Joe Biden. But there is an injunction out there, and it's a really dumb injunction entered by another dumb maggot judge that says the Biden administration can have no contact with social media companies. As if somehow there's some, there's an domestic abuse or something. Oh no, Joe Biden! Don't you get within 300 feet of Leon Scum? I wish I was kidding. I'm not.
I can't help what people will believe or not. I can only speak to what the facts are.
Was anyone ever fired or otherwise reprimanded for?
You notice how she doesn't have an answer for that response? Let's go back.
American citizens.
Because I don't believe that's what we did, I'm not sure there's anyone that would have made such a decision.
Do you really expect the American public to believe that you were not involved in the decisions related to using social media companies to suppress the First Amendment rights of American citizens?
I can't help what people will believe or not. I can only speak to what the facts are.
Was anyone ever fired or otherwise reprimanded for pursuing mass censorship? In other words, has anybody been held accountable for taking the actions that were described in the decision by the district court out of Louisiana?
Well, the district court's decision just came out on July 4th.
Has anybody been reprimanded or held accountable?
And at the moment, we have issued guidance to everyone in the organization who could be affected as to how to follow that.
Has anyone been reprimanded?
I'm not going to speak to personnel matters because we have not made any such determination at this stage.
Mr. Ray, I have some letters from Lindsey Graham and Rand Paul that were sent to you on April 20th and June 20th.
Breaking. She has letters from Lindsey Graham and Rand Paul. Oh, whatever could those two be corresponding with? Oh, wait. No, never mind. Sorry. We regret the error.
20th, requesting a meeting to discuss the Weapons of Mass Destruction Directorate's work investigating the origins of SARS COVID-19. Your office has never responded to these letters. Do you intend to respond to Senators Lindsey Graham and Rand Paul to find out more information about the origin of COVID-19?
Oh, I'm sorry. I just have to indulge in a little fantasy. Well, I'll respond to them there. Miss Lindsey. Go get a margarita and lie down, darling. And Rand, for the love of God, do something about that thing on your head.
Well, we try hard to respond to all correspondence we get from the Hill. We get a lot. My intention is that we would have an appropriate response. Sometimes our responses, by longstanding procedure, our responses have to go through the department before they go out. So it could be that it's held up there, but I don't know that that's...
So
I don't know if that's the case in these particular
Senators
ones.
Senators Graham and Paul should be receiving a response from
some
your
kind
office
of response,
pretty soon.
Some kind of response? Fuck you two. Really? With a dried-out saguaro cactus? Seriously?
As you may know, we were the only agency in the intelligence community until more recently when the Department of Energy did as well to reach the assessment that, in our folks' view, we thought
was
more likely
to
be a lab leak.
Okay. Mr. Ray, from the Twitter files, Missouri versus Biden disclosures, the Durham investigation and report, and exposure and collapse of the Russian collusion hoax, the American people fully understand that there is a two-tier justice system that has been weaponized to persecute people based on their political beliefs, and that you have personally worked to weaponize the FBI against conservatives. I asked Mr. Durham about this, to which he answered, "I don't think that things can go too much further with the view that law enforcement, particularly the FBI or Department of Justice, runs a two-tiered system of justice. The nation can't stand under those circumstances." Director Ray, what are you prepared to do to reform federal law enforcement in a manner which earns back the trust of the American people?
Well, first off, I would disagree with your characterization of the FBI and certainly your description of my own approach. The idea that I'm biased against conservatives seems somewhat insane to me, given my own personal background. As to how we are approaching our work of protecting the American people and upholding the Constitution, it starts with me having emphasized to all of our folks over and over and over again in everything we do that we need to do the right thing in the right way, and that means following the facts wherever they lead, no matter who likes it. It starts, then goes on from there to all kinds of enhanced procedures, safeguards, approvals, double checks, triple checks, record keeping requirement, accountability policies, funding of new functions like an Office of Internal Audit that didn't exist before, the installation of an entirely new leadership team from my predecessor, and where I can take action, where we can take action to hold people accountable by removing people from the chain of command.
Gentle ladies, time has expired, Director. We're going to take a 30-minute break for votes. We will be back. I'm going to try to start right at 2:15.
Unanimous consent to introduce
without objections
to the record.
Without
Isn't it hilarious that Jim Jacketoff Jordan interrupted the witness when the gentle lady's time had expired? The gentle lady wasn't speaking. How about that? That's a case of, well, Harriet. And every time I see her name, I cannot help it. I think of that early Mike Myers film, So I Married an Axe Murderer. where he's the one of a beatnik poet, and the love interest name is Harriet, and he's on the stage in San Francisco, and there's a bongo, and he's got, I don't know if there's a beret involved, and Harriet! Harriet! I wonder if she's ever seen that movie. Thank you, Kate. Twitter files, subject line. Take a shot. Or 20. No way you can get through this sober. Oh, God, Kate. Breaking news from Kevin in Western Mass. Merrick Garland is appealing the sentences for some seditious conspirators, saying that they're too short. Well, now. Merrick, who knew you had it in you? I know, Ralphs. It's like what Kate said a minute ago. No way. Well, what the fuck is Harriet Hageman talking about? Look, she's just reading words in a row. There's no way that she even vaguely understands a word of what she said. It's come down from either Jim Jacketoff, Jordan's office, or majority counsel on the House clown car of the judiciary. Because that's how this carcass works or functions. In which case I say, or dysfunctions. And it's in the stacks. It'll take me a minute. By the way, we're at the third hour of the program. This one's flying by. We're at the third hour of the program. It would be great if we could bring the fundraising goal down from $1,100. So far, our two kind benefactors this afternoon, our anonymous internet friend and Lori up in Michigan, got us down to that. Thank you both so much. Where is it? Because I want to address this issue of the really stupid injunction. Because it's here. Sorry. There it is. This story did come down on July the 4th. Attorneys general in Louisiana Stan and Missouri Stan brought a lawsuit, again, about the Twitter files. Everybody drink. And they said that, I guess, the federal government was colluding with social media companies to try to depress vaccine hesitancy. Well, on July the 4th, a U.S. district judge forbade the Biden administration from meeting or communicating with social media companies to moderate content. Jeff Landry and former Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt are the culprits here. Schmidt, who is now going to be a member of the United States Senate, or is a member of the United States Senate, said, well, this here is a win for free speech. The asshole who did the dirty deed occupies a seat on the federal bench in the Western District of Louisiana Stan. His name is Terry Doughty. D-O-U-G-H-T-Y. And let's see if we can get the 411 on Judge Doughty. Oh, yeah, there's a winner. He's the Chief U.S. District Judge of the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Louisiana Stan. He is, of course, a loyal maggot. He's 64 years old. And it was 2021 when this maggot, this homicidal maggot, issued the nationwide injunction against the federal requirement that healthcare workers be vaccinated against
the China virus.
In that ruling, he said that Dr. Peter McCullough, who is a quack, he cited him favorably, with McCullough saying that vaccines aren't useful because you have to take booster shots. And vaccines don't prevent transmission of the disease, and the virus has achieved an immune escape from COVID-19 vaccines. Dr. McCullough is not an immunologist. He's not an epidemiologist. Dr. McCullough, it was, in fact, a cardiologist and got shit-canned as vice chief of internal medicine at Baylor University Medical Center because he was an anti-vaxxer COVIDiot. Doughty also entered an injunction preventing, get this, Head Start, you know, pre-K workers from having to be vaccinated against COVID-19. 24 states in that case, maggot attorneys general, were on that lawsuit. And then September 21st of 2022, he made the injunction about Head Start permanent in 24 states. And said that President Biden lacked the constitutional authority to issue such a mandate. This guy is a dangerous freak. And so there's a reason that the Missouri and Louisiana Stan, Missouri Stan and Louisiana Stan attorneys general filed before this goon. Because they knew that they would get what they wanted. This is called judge shopping. And they do it with a will. And so the injunction is there, and like Christopher Wray said, we've informed our people who deal with this sort of thing, how best to proceed. Because, see, these maggot attorneys general wanted more people dead from COVID. Because freedom! They wanted more nominees and winners of the Herman Cain Award over there on Reddit. His ruling said that the Department of Health and Human Services and the FBI couldn't talk to social media companies, quote, for the purpose of urging, encouraging, pressuring, or inducing in any manner the removal, deletion, suppression, or reduction of content containing protected free speech. The question then is, for the FBI, who has some pretty damn good lawyers, is anti-vaxxerism stuff that is plainly false, plainly meant to harm Americans, often generated from Russian troll farms, protected free speech, when it gets catapulted by some numbnuts in horse's ass, Missouri? So the Biden administration will probably appeal. It will go to the Fifth Judicial U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, where Judge Doughty will doubtless be upheld and eventually perhaps wind up at the doorstep of our most puissant Supreme Catholic Majesties. By the way, following up on what Kevin just sent along. The appeals are of rulings by Judge Mehta, the Oath Keeper sentences, including Stuart Rhodes. I, says Kevin, I mean, I, E-Y-E. Shoot your eye out, kid. That's inspiring to see. Hey, Ralphs, thanks for jumping in. We're below $1,100 now. Thank you so much. God, this. Well, eventually, when the historians from Norblap 9 or the 6-foot-tall sentient cockroaches who write our history, will the historians say that we died of our own stupidity? Is that what it's going to be? Where's the political value in this? Does this tell us everything we need to know about the modern Republican Party, the maggots? That they have come to the conclusion that encouraging their own constituents to die is the best way to formulate a winning strategy? Yeah. Oh, by the way, another ruling has come down in the state of New York. After E. Jean Carroll upped her demand for damages against Nitwit Nero when he doubled down and continued to slime all over. Because the Department of Justice decided to change course on an opinion about E. Jean Carroll's case. The Biden administration, DOJ, sent a letter to the federal court in Manhattan and said that Nitwit Nero no longer qualifies for government employee immunity and can, in fact, be sued for remarks that he made, you know, slanderous remarks that he made about E. Jean Carroll while he was president. Because, among other things, Marcus Aurelius has said,
I was acting in the interest of the American people when I told the American people what a filthy, sleazy liar she is. I had to speak out against her so I could maintain the trust of the American people.
In the letter, the DOJ said that history supports an inference that Mr. Trump was motivated by a personal grievance stemming from events that occurred many years prior to Mr. Trump's presidency. And they're right. Initially, the Biden administration had said that Nitwit Nero was protected by the Westfall Act. The Westfall Act says you can't sue a government employee over things that are, well, that are a part of their official duties. Tangerine Tiberius did not have an official duty to slander a private citizen. Well, cue up Stephen Chung, a spokes creep, apparently, for the Mango Mussolini.
This witch hunt, funded and carried out by woke, radical, liberal Democrats, is now even more exposed as a partisan sham, as the Department of Justice has broken with long-standing tradition in a desperate attempt to perpetuate this hoax. The corrupt Biden administration is politically weaponizing the justice system against President Trump because he is the overwhelming favorite to defeat Joe Biden and take back the White House.
Never mind the fact that of all the Republicans running right now, the one most likely to have his ass handed to him by Joe Biden is, wait for it, yeah, Clementine Caligula. The government has said here, although the statements themselves were made in a work context, the allegations that prompted the statements related to a purely personal incident, an alleged sexual assault that occurred decades prior to Mr. Trump's presidency. That sexual assault was obviously not job-related. Jesus, common sense has carried the day for at least a moment in the DOJ. So, having been hit squarely amidships, and you gotta say he's kind of broadened the beam, Nitwit Nero, I don't even know what you call it anymore. This isn't doubling down. This isn't, I mean, is this octupling down? Well, he had a fit. He went with his curiously fat little thumbs on his tiny little hands over to his rickety, wobbling, wheels coming off social media platform and said,
"The DOJ will not defend me in the E. Jean Carroll civil case, which is all part of the political witch hunt, lawyered up by a political operative who I just beat in another case, financed by a big political funder and judged by a Clinton appointee who truly hates Trump. The statements that I made about Carol are all true. I didn't rape her. I won that at trial. I only sexually abused her because she couldn't tell if it was my thumb or my dingus."
I added that part.
"And other than that, other than for this case, I have no idea who she is, what she looks like, or anything about her."
Even though in deposition they showed him a picture of her at the relevant time. And he said,
"Looks like Ivana."
But the whole thing about defending him and saying that he was acting within the scope of his duties, when did that happen? That happened at the direction of Bill Barr to prosecution. Keep talking, dipshit. Keep digging. Let's not, don't smarten up a chump. It reminds me of an old George Carlin line. He said that he wanted to pay a tattoo artist to tattoo on the back of some unsuspecting victim. Let's never, ever, ever tell this guy what's on his back. Paren, he thinks it's a pirate ship. Close paren. Precisely. Of course, it wouldn't matter if zombie Clarence Darrow rose up out of the grave and said, "Listen, you fuckwit, shut the fuck up. You're killing yourself. You're going to get absolutely hammered in this trial if you don't shut up." Wouldn't matter. Wouldn't matter if he had zombie Melvin Belli with him. It would not matter. As every lawyer who has ever represented him has found to their chagrin, especially when the check didn't clear, he's unrepresentable. Because he will not take the advice that he is at least nominally paying for. Jesus. Oh, back to the, what was his name? Gal, whatever. Nancy Mace. The moderate Republican from South Carolina, you know, because Gal left. This is, yeah. She's a moderate Republican because she thinks that the men in her caucus and the self-hating women really shouldn't be trying to get a peek up the hoo-hoo of every pregnant woman in America, or non-pregnant for that matter. But she's still a maggot. And she says the Department of Justice has silenced our top witness, our whistleblower. Yeah. No one should be surprised here. I don't trust the DOJ or the FBI. They're trying to silence our witnesses. This is a way to do that. He deserves to testify before the Oversight Committee. We have a lot of questions. We want to know why the evidence he brought forth to the FBI in that Brussels meeting in 2019 was not followed up on. And the irony here is not lost on anyone charging him for failing to register as a foreign agent. Of all the nerve, my stars and garters. Oh, honey. Apparently Nancy doesn't understand that he was indicted way back when. And can't do enough calendric math to realize that those were the same Justice Department lawyers who interviewed him in Brussels in 2019, who then signed off on the indictments. And this is the same Nancy Mace who says we're losing our shirts to a guy who can't find his pants. That we is important there, Nance. Oh, and it's been a little while since we've had a Mr. Meth Pillow sighting. Apparently, Mr. Meth Pillow didn't get the memo. Namely, everything Trump touches dies. And so Mr. Meth Pillow, his multi-million dollar company, may be circling the drain because Mr. Meth Pillow's company made an announcement in recent days that they're going to have an auction. And they are going to auction off a shit ton of Meth Pillow, well, equipment that they use for making their meth pillows. Because Mr. Meth Pillow was more interested in kissing up to Trump than he was into running what had been until then a very successful company. According to a report in the Minneapolis Star Tribune, the meth pillow company listed over 850 items like sewing machines, industrial fabric spreaders, forklifts. Wonder how many meth pillows. That's a lot of meth pillows to need a forklift. But it's all going on the block at K-Bid. Because after he decided to flush his and his company's credibility down the drain, people didn't want to buy his shitty pillows anymore. It was a massive, massive cancellation. We lost $100 million from attacks by the box stores. They're attacks. They're not attacks. Put down the pipe, Mike. The shopping networks, the shopping channels, all of them did cancel culture on us. And
he didn't have to, but he ran out there attacking Dominion voting systems, and he got named in the defamation lawsuit.
And then, of course, there was the $5 million that an arbitration panel awarded to an expert dude who completely trashed every one of Mike Lindell's paranoid, meth-induced, meth-brain claims. I'm sorry, he was on crack. Was it crack? But there's no... It doesn't have the alliterative quality. So he's already out $5 million. He's part of a $1.3 billion defamation lawsuit. I'm sure, though, that Mr. Meth Pillow has squirreled away some ducats somewhere along the way. Yeah. Is this going to be a 3-hour filler-obster? I mean, it's cool if it is, but if you want to engage in some conversation, the stress line's open. So is the Skype line. On Skype, Robin Kincaid Horn, KincaidHorn, Robin Kincaid Horn. And, of course, the stress line, 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And, you know, new callers are always welcome. Always enjoy that. Oh, and apropos of nothing, but at least it smells a little bit like justice. Remember Larry Nassar? The sicko, pervert, pedophile, creep doctor who sexually abused a tremendous number of young women, especially in USA Gymnastics. Well, he's doing hard time and will probably never see the outside of a prison, and shouldn't. Apparently, there in prison, the inmates were watching Wimbledon, the tennis tournament. In Mariolde, Engeland. Well, while they were watching Wimbledon, because he is a sick, perverted, disgusting, criminal creep, Larry Nassar
started talking about how he wanted to see girls in the Wimbledon women's match. You know, maybe 14, 15 years old, like the ones that he raped and sexually abused in USA Gymnastics. And at that point in time, apparently, another inmate by the name of Shane McMillan, who has a history of doing things like assaulting a CO back in 2006 at a federal penitentiary in Louisiana, and also tried to stab another inmate to death at Supermax in Florence, Colorado in 2011. I guess they've stepped him down to wherever it is Larry Nassar is, somewhere in Florida. And so during the day, the federal penitentiary cells are left open so that the inmates can mingle. And Shane McMillan, after hearing Larry Nassar's disgusting, perverted, skeevy, sleazy, nasty, vile, awful remarks, took a shiv and went into Larry Nassar's cell and begun to stabbing on him. Apparently Shane McMillan has a skill set with a shiv. Because even before four other inmates could pull Shane McMillan off of Larry Nassar, why they did, I do not know, he had managed to stab Larry Nassar multiple times in the neck, the chest, and the back, and ultimately Larry Nassar required life-saving measures at a hospital. As of this reporting, he is reported in stable condition, but his injuries include a collapsed lung. And it is Larry Nassar's second assault in federal custody. He assaulted numerous young women at Michigan State University, stars of USA Gymnastics. And when it all came out, it turned out that Larry Nassar had a stash of, because of course he did, sexually explicit images of children. On the one hand, I'm loathe to approve of this. On the other hand, dude, you gross, skeevy piece of shit. Don't be sitting there watching Wimbledon talking about how you wish it was the little girls that you used to fuck. Because apparently there is some degree of morality, even among hardened criminals in the federal prison system. And I said earlier, that we would talk more about Mark Robinson, the lieutenant governor of North Carolina, Stan. Well, he used to say the abortion word all the time. Abortion is murder. He said a lot of other hateful shit, too. He is, in fact, the front runner to be the Republican nominee for governor in North Carolina, Stan. And so back on July 6th, the Republicans had an ice cream social. It was 5 days after North Carolina's draconian, brutal, hateful abortion ban went into effect. And speaking to the assembled mouth walkers and knuckle breathers and people who pick their teeth with their toenail clippings, he said, "North Carolina needs to become a destination state for life. Now notice what I said. I said life. I did not say the A word. The A word. Everybody wants us to say the A word. No, sir, no more." Because he doesn't want to say the A word, because the vast majority of North Carolinians oppose what the Republican legislature of North Carolina has done. They did this over Governor Roy Cooper's veto. Because one woman, one self-hating woman, one petulant self-hating woman switched from Democrat to Republican. And even though she campaigned on protecting a woman's right to choose, slipped the shiv into every person capable of becoming pregnant in the state of North Carolina. So now Mark Robinson doesn't want to say the abortion word. He didn't used to be so shy. Back in February, he told some maggot talker on the radio, "If I had all the power right now, let's say I was the governor and had a willing legislature, we could pass a bill saying you can't have an abortion in North Carolina for any reason. Because it's murder, it's a moral evil, it's worse than slavery. Because when a woman becomes pregnant, it's not her body anymore." He wants rape babies born, he wants incest babies born with arms growing out of their heads, big ears, buggy eyes, born playing the fucking banjo the minute they exit the birth canal. So now, but he really, really wants to be governor so he can go to war against the trannies and the queers. He doesn't want to say abortion anymore because 45% of North Carolina voters are either opposed or strongly opposed to what he got that he wanted so badly. Only 23% of voters in North Carolina support or strongly support this act of misogynistic brutality. Hopefully, like the furious Minads of old, women in North Carolina will make him say abortion a lot. And then this, file this under why I often despise the for-profit media. Hey, thank you, Christopher. Christopher just jumped in over on Venmo. Every little bit helps. You're darn right it does, Christopher, and we are now down to $1,080 to fill in the fundraising hole. I cannot thank you enough, Christopher. Thank you so very much. Axios and the national inquirerization of American politics. This is just nauseating. I've seen it all over the place, and I figure we might as well deal with it. And I don't care about the content nearly as much as I do the intent in publishing it. How's this for a clickbait headline from Axios? Old Yeller, Biden's private fury. See, it's a play on words. It's a pun, y'all. You get it? You get it? It's a joke, I'm telling you. It's a joke. You ain't got no sense of humor. Old Yeller, because, see, Biden is supposed to be prone to yelling about things. You know, Axios, fucking seventh graders, call me back when Joe Biden starts making the walls run red with ketchup. Why don't you? The article is by some ink-stained wretch named Alex Thompson. Who writes, in public, President Biden likes to whisper to make a point. In private, he's prone to yelling. Behind closed doors, Biden has such a quick-trigger temper that some aides try to avoid meeting alone with him. Some take a colleague almost as a shield against a solo blast. You know, we're talking about the President of the United States here. We're talking about the President. It's the President, y'all. We're talking about the President. Who, suffice to say, has a few things that might actually get under his skin from time to time. Like a maggot Congress. Like a constant phony baloney attack on his last remaining son. Sing it, Scott. Hunter Biden, Hunter Biden, the Benghazi of our time. We will hear about Hunter Biden till we're all fit to lose our mind. Scandalous, I tell you, scandalous. Alex Thompson writes, the president's admonitions include, God damn it, how the fuck don't you know this? Don't fucking bullshit me and get the fuck out of here. According to current and former Biden aides who have witnessed and been on the receiving end of such outbursts. God, you get the idea that Alex probably broke into tears just hearing the stories. Why it matters, hint, it doesn't. The private eruptions paint a more complicated picture of Biden as a manager and president, complicated, than his carefully cultivated image as a kindly uncle who loves aviator sunglasses and ice cream. And then this. Some Biden aides, that's the Fox News style book at work, y'all, think the president would be better off occasionally displaying his temper in public as a way to assuage voter concerns that the 80-year-old president is disengaged and too old for the office. Because, see, if you can swear like a sailor, that means you're full of vim and vigor and masculine, manly, masculinity, manliness. You know what? Okay, Alex Thompson. Good. Right there with you. Absolutely. I do. I admit it. Coming clean. I want to see Joe Biden walk out with laser beams shooting out of his goddamn eyes. And I want to see him light up Peter Ducey in the White House the press room. You stupid little punk. You silly little fucking pissant. You goddamn Nepo baby. We all know you would not have this job if your dad wasn't on Fox and Fiends, okay? Fuck right off into the sun. Everybody, raise your hands. You want to see Joe Biden take some people apart? Fuck you, jacket off, Jordan. Put your jacket on, you miserable piece of shit. God damn Marjorie Taylor Greene, if your brains were gas, you wouldn't have enough to run a piss-ants motorcycle around a BB. I am here for every last bit of that. Kudos to you, journalist Alex Thompson. Good God, they're just recycling shit now, aren't they? The for-profit media, pearl-clutching and grumbling about the fact that Barack Obama wasn't angry enough, was so silly, so stupid, and so hilarious that it became a bit with Key and Peele with Obama's anger translator. Remember that? And if they weren't bitching and moaning and pissing and carping about that, they're,
well, why isn't Obama out on the golf course playing golf and smoking cigarettes with John Boehner?
And you have to go paragraphs into this birdcage liner to find out that apparently Joe Biden once got really pissed off at a guy named Jeff Zients, who happens to now be Biden's chief of staff, so it couldn't have been that bad. You know, if I think back to, and there's an archive, if I think back to the worst days of the pandemic, I think some of us got a bit angry at all the maggots and the COVIDiots and the rotted F. Kennedy Jr.'s and the Nitwit Nero and Deborah Burks. I think we may have even done a bit of swearing in our own right. We don't know what he was carrying on about with Jeff Zients when he was COVID czar. But can't you imagine? It's like, son of a... Shit, Jeff! Can't you craft a better message to take down these piece of shit COVIDiot Republicans? Come on, man! Is that even possible? But he likes Jeff Zients enough to have him be his chief of staff. That's a pretty high position of trust in any White House. And he's no fucking Mark Meadows. So Axios, you know, seventh grade, picked up the phone and said, hey, they called Jeff Zients' spokesperson and said, hey, give us the inside skinny about how Biden yelled at your boss. And the spokesperson for him said, I'm not going to speak to what internal convos may or may not have happened between Jeff and the president. Chris Whipple, who authored a bathroom book called The Fight of His Life Inside Joe Biden's White House, said, there's no question that the Biden temper is for real. It may not be as volcanic as Bill Clinton's, but it's definitely there. How is it Bill Clinton gets the reference and not the guy who throws the fucking ketchup at the walls? Anybody want to help me out on that? But it's not nearly as bad as they make it out, because Whipple's book has a quote from Jen Psaki, who I think we all respect. I hope we do. And she said that she told the president, I said to him multiple times, I'll know we have a really good trusting relationship when you yell at me the first time. That's what people who trust each other do. If you're safe around somebody, if you have a caring relationship with somebody, you know that it's okay to kind of lose your shit once in a while. I mean, hell, this program is living proof of that. I don't do it nearly as much as I used to, but God bless it. This is one of those moments. Who's the gin-guzzling jackass who... editor who green-lighted the publication of this piece of crap? This is for nothing more than the generation of content on right-wing hate radio. Well, you know, when they're You know, when they get demented and everything and they're out of their mind, sometimes they say more dirty things than they used to say. And not a word about the legendary temper of America's former toddler president. The orange shit stain. Whipple notes in his book, Saki wouldn't have to wait long. But way down in, you find out why he loses his temper. And, hey, Joe, we see you. You're valid. He loses his temper when his aides come in unprepared. He'll grill aides on topics until it's clear they don't know the answer to a question, a routine that some see as meticulous and others call stump the chump or stump the dummy. Being yelled at by the president has become an internal initiation ceremony in this White House, aides say. If Biden doesn't yell at you, it could be a sign he doesn't respect you. Or maybe that you don't have his trust and his confidence. And the sad thing is, you have to get way down into the article to find out things like Biden's longtime chief of staff, when the future president represented Delaware in the Senate, told Axios that Biden's process is policy-driven and has made him a strong executive. If there is something that's not in the brief, he's going to find it. It's not to embarrass people. It's because he wants to get to the right decision. Most people who have worked for him like the fact that he challenges them and gets them to a better decision, as opposed to the previous insurrectionist squatter in the White House who has a hissy over
the strawberries. They thought I was mad. They thought I was crazy. But I caught them. I caught them with the strawberries.
But they come back to it and they describe him as moody. We have never had a Vulcan president. Moody. Would you be moody if you were dealing with Ukraine and a bunch of maggot monkeys flinging poo through the cages, through the bars of the cages in the monkey house? Would you be moody? I'd be moody. The big picture. Biden tries to conceal his temper in public, but occasionally has shown flashes of it, as some former aides have written about. He was caught on a hot mic in January calling Fox News' Peter Doocy a stupid son of a bitch. Because he is! Where's the reference to him looking at Obama and saying, that's a big fucking deal? He's from a working class family in PA and Delaware. He speaks in the form and fashion most American people are conversant with. He's not some mushmouth Southerner who instead of calling someone a hopeless dumbass, will say, well, bless their hearts. He's not Lindsey Graham. He's an actual good president. I loved how everybody jumped his ass over cluster munitions in Ukraine. Those things are awful. They're horrible. Many countries have banned them, banned their use altogether. Russia hasn't. And because Russia hasn't, we haven't. And so he made the decision to send cluster munitions to Ukraine because those were the artillery shells that we had laying around yet. and we are low on them and have to have more manufactured. Nitwit Nero had a hissy about that earlier.
Joe Biden breached national security by saying that we're low on ammunition.
At this point in time, geezer disgustus is so far gone that he can't even remember that he said the same damn thing in 2019. And here's Axios doing the bidding of shitbirds like Tuckio Rose, testicle toasting Tuckio Rose Carlson, and the Hannity job and the like. There's a guy named Jeff Connaughton who is a former campaign and Senate aide and worked around Biden, and he wrote a tell-all. He called Biden an egomaniacal autocrat determined to manage his staff through fear. He told of a time during the 2008 presidential campaign when a 23-year-old fundraising staffer got into the car with Biden. Okay, Senator, time to do some fundraising calls. And Biden responded by turning around, looking at him, and saying, "Get the fuck out of the car." Yeah, if a 23-year-old got in my car and said, okay, it's time for you to... No. You don't give orders to that man. You get in the car and say, Senator, how about making a few fundraising calls? You up to it? You up for it? Want to do it? Need money? That probably won't get you get the fuck out of the car. It'll get you not right fucking now, son. But as my dear friend John Britovo says, boy, howdy shit. This is what passes for journalism at Axios. The hell does Axios even mean? Sounds like a really, really revolting breakfast cereals. Axios! And thank you, Colin. Hey, Colin just stepped up. Colin got us down to down below $1,000. $995, to be precise. Ciphering on the fly. Yeah, $995. Thank you so much, Colin. Thanks a bunch. Okay, we got time enough for one more story. And, well, I think we're all pretty sure that we saw this coming. The story comes out. Hi, Joy. Hi, Micah. Hi, Lori. The story comes out of Traverse City, Michigan, where a hairdresser by the name of Christine Geiger, in the wake of the 303 creative decision, went on Facebook to make a bold statement. The post she put on Facebook has since been disappeared because her boldness apparently faded a mite. But on Facebook, Christine Geiger of Studio 8 Hair Lab in Traverse City, Michigan, wrote, if a human identifies as anything other than a man, woman, please seek services at a local pet groomer. You are not welcome at this salon, period. Then she had to delete her Facebook page, and she had to delete her and set her Instagram account to private. But in her biography, she says, "We do not cater to woke ideologies." And she tried to backtrack and save her business because she said, "I don't have any issue with lesbian, gay, or bisexual customers, but I will not support the TQ plus community. This stance was taken." There's that passive voice. I took this stance. You horrible creature. Was taken to ensure that clients have the best experience. You don't have clients, you have customers. What do you think, you're fucking lawyer Abe Lincoln, Christine? And I'm admitting that since I'm not willing to play the pronoun game or cater to requests outside of what I perceive as normal. Well, hopefully she'll be out of business pretty soon, but there's the overarching thing is not about... it's about her bigotry. But it's also about the flood tide of hate that our most puissant dread sovereign supreme Catholic majesties, aided and abetted by the Alliance Defaming Freedom, have opened in this country. If you identify as something besides he or she, go to a pet groomer. What she's doing is she's channeling the old, discredited, sickening bullshit notion that ran wild like fire through the Republican primaries and general elections of 2022, that there are kids in school who identify as cats and they demand litter boxes. When in fact, to the extent that there are litter boxes in schools, they're in classrooms for terrified students to use. When there's an outbreak of Second Amendment freedom and some lawful gun owner comes through the school trying to murder children, and there's no way for them to go to a bathroom while they're in lockdown. That's the kind of person Christine Geiger is. That's the kind of person these transphobic assholes are. And I really, really hope that the LGs and Bs aren't on board with this hateful shit. Polestar is the LGBTQ organization in Traverse City. And in a statement, Polestar says Christine Geiger's business and her comments are not welcomed in Traverse City. Christine Geiger's entire statement said, "If a human identifies as anything other than a man, woman, please seek services at a local pet groomer. You're not welcome at this salon, period. Should you request to have a particular pronoun used, please note, we may simply refer to you as hey you. This is America, free speech. This small business has the right to refuse services. We are not bound to any oaths as realtors are regarding discrimination. My recent airport experience validates this." Oh, somebody hurt her tender and delicate fifis in the airport. I don't identify as anything but she or her. Does that mean I can't go and get a wash and cut at her tacky little salon? Polestar said Studio 8 Hair Lab's recent comments comparing members of the queer community to animals are not welcomed in Traverse City, period. Hate has shown time and time again to be a losing business strategy, and we must not allow this blight to take root in our town. Statements like the one from Studio 8 undermine the hard work that has been put in to make Traverse City the absolute best that it can be. I hope Polestar is right. I hope she loses everything. Or maybe, if I'm a better person, I hope somehow she learns that people are just people. What's she going to do? If a guy walks in for a haircut, is she going to say, "Are you a real guy?" No, I mean a real, real guy. Hey, can I see your dick? Well, that's the business model that our most puissant dread sovereign supreme Catholic majesties have given the green light to in the United States of America, and it falls to the people of the United States of America to reject such people, such business, and to reject our most puissant supreme Catholic majesties. I wonder, in the long run, I wonder how much Fappy Thomas has been directly or indirectly paid for his hateful opinions. And I wonder what those payments, those vacations, those honoraria will avail him in his final moments someday. Can't help it. So that's it. That's the program. Turned out to be a 3+ hour Phil Robster. Hope y'all enjoyed it. I did. All tired. Thank you so much to all of our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you to Ralphs. Thank you to Christopher. Thank you, Glory, up in Michigan. Thank you to our anonymous internet friend. And thank you, Colin. Hopefully we'll reach, like, mid-July on track. And y'all were a part of that. Thank you. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. I don't know if anyone ever showed up in the chat room this evening to moderate. Well, thanks to Steve and Roger just the same. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you. Remember, please, if you're listening to the podcast, like and subscribe and help us grow the program. It'd be fun to eventually be in a spot where I got to do six phone lines and get a new Comrex and all of that shit. That'd be a blast. That happens if we grow the program. Like, subscribe, follow, press the heart button at TuneIn Radio. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20+ years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. A proud union shop. Please stay safe. Wear your mask if you're around the maggots. They're obviously still a danger. They're obviously still trying to spread disinformation or the disinformation generated out of Russian troll farms and the like. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer. Keep some with you, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance. Oh, hey, Elbert in Rhode Island. You out there? Give a holler if you are. Just want to know you're okay. Because when we don't hear from somebody in a while, we worry. Still wondering about Ron and Raleigh. If some maggot comes towards you on the sidewalk, blathering about, this is why nobody likes the press. Y'all want to know for following our own rules. What a nerve you got! That's why nobody likes the press. And there's someone from Axios standing there typing madly away, going, "Mm-hmm." Avoid them both like the plague, because they are. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.